If you own or just know a dog, you probably marvel at the ability of the dog to find things using its sense of smell. That big nose can do amazing things in identifying between odors. Our little noses are not quite in that league, or that's the thinking anyway. The nose and the machinery behind it that allows us to distinguish one smell from another is actually pretty good, far better than is generally thought. Our first guest takes a stand for the human sense of smell in a recently published study. The title says it all. Poor human olfaction is a 19th century myth. The author is John McGann, who's an associate professor at Rutgers University, the head of the McGann Laboratory on the Neurobiology of Sensory Cognition. Dr. McGann, thanks for joining us today.
Morning, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
So we can start this with a short phrase, blame Broca. Who was Broca and what did he do?
So Paul Broca was a very famous neuroanatomist and anthropologist back in the 1800s. And he's famous to this day for his work on aphasia, which is the damage to language that people experience after a stroke. In fact, he's so famous that probably every intro neuroscience student learns his name for Broca's area, the region involved in speech. But one of the other things that Broca was interested in was understanding what made humans special and different from other animals. In particular, what gave us the sense of free will, that we could decide how we responded to stimuli, whereas he thought that animals besides humans didn't have that ability. And so he was studying lots of different brains, lots of different animals, and he noticed that in humans, who he thought have free will, they have these really large frontal lobes, and in proportion, a part of the brain called the olfactory bulb, that is sort of the first station that processes odor information coming in from the nose, was proportionately quite small. And so he said, oh, well, we have a proportionately quite small olfactory bulb, and we, unlike other animals, get to decide how we respond to smells, whereas smells make many kinds of animals have sex and other things like that. We get to choose. We have free will. So he classified all of these different mammals into smellers and non-smellers, and he put the humans in the non-smeller category. Because not because we couldn't smell, but because we got to sort of decide how we responded to those odors. And that basic classification, it got modified a little bit over the years, but it also kind of got exaggerated and propagated down into the current belief that humans have a bad sense of smell.
But it really starts with size matters, was the way he viewed the olfactory bulb and its utility to us?
Yeah, so sort of a quirk of brains that different animals, you know, bigger animals tend to have bigger brains and smaller animals tend to have smaller brains. And generally, however big or small the brain is, if you look at any piece of the brain, they're all more or less proportional. We kind of like blow the whole thing up evenly like a balloon. And this quirk is that this olfactory bulb structure that handles odor information, it doesn't seem to sort of inflate or deflate proportionally. It seems like there's sort of a certain size that's just about right. And most mammals have roughly the same number of neurons in that structure. Most mammals seem to have roughly the same size. And so it's proportionately a lot smaller in a big-brained animal, but it's not actually smaller. In fact, it's quite a bit bigger in a human than it is, say, in a mouse or a rat.
Which is good to know. But, you know, rats often get credit for smelling really well. I mean, do they, or is it just they live in a world where it's more important for them to smell?
Well, so I think the critical insight that's emerged over the last few years is that it really depends on how you test, and it's not easy to just generically talk about how good a sense of smell is from one animal to another, because we're all different. And so a human has got one set of genes for being able to detect most odors, and a dog has got a different set of genes for being able to detect a different set of odors. And while we can all mostly smell most everything, we're tuned to be differently sensitive. So a rat is particularly good at detecting certain odors, and a dog is particularly good at detecting certain odors, and a human is particularly good at detecting certain odors. And it turns out that for some odors, humans are better than rats and dogs.
John McGann's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's making a case that human olfaction, our use of the sense of smell, is actually better than we often get credit for. And it dates back to some misunderstandings that date back to the 19th century we've been talking about here. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. How well do you smell and how well do you think you should or could? 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So did the rest of science essentially take Paul Broca's word for it and just say, okay, I guess our noses don't work so well?
So one of the more terrible things that happens in science, because we're human beings and we're very fallible as we do our science, is that we're subject to confirmation bias. And so since so many scientists have been taught from the beginning that humans have a bad sense of smell, at least compared to other animals, when we find things that might have been interpreted differently, they say, oh, well, this is consistent with the bad sense of smell, so they sort of reinforce it. So, for instance, as I said, every animal is different, and humans have a smaller number of genes for odor receptors than say, dogs or rats. And so that was immediately interpreted. If you look even in the very first paper that said, oh, look, humans have a X number of genes for odors, in the very first paper they say, ah, and this must be part of the reason why humans have a worse sense of smell. But they didn't test smell. They didn't actually prove that the number of genes had any relationship to what we could or couldn't smell. They just began with the presumption that our sense of smell was bad and then found evidence that they thought was consistent with it. And that's called the confirmation and bias in science, and it affects quite a lot of our research, unfortunately.
Where it confirms what you thought you knew coming in.
Exactly.
I did find a list, like what you're talking about, online of the top 10 sniffers, and it did measure genes, what you were just talking about. Rats, number 2 behind elephants. Humans were just off the list, below guinea pigs are out number 12 or so. So is genes the best way to measure? And I guess the bigger question is, how do you then measure the effectiveness of our ability to smell?
Yeah, so looking at genes and trying to imagine about how well an animal smells is really, in a way, not that different than looking at the size of the brain and trying to judge about how well something smells. It's kind of a, it might have some explanatory value, but it doesn't actually answer the question about how well does one animal smell compared to another. So the way we actually measure it, and in fact, this is the way most of the folks in the field measure it, is we do what are called psychophysical experiments, where we'll train an animal or we'll give instructions to a person, and we'll give them a series of odors, like we'll give them 3 different tubes to smell, 2 of which have the same odor and 1 of which has a slightly different odor. And we'll say, well, which one is different than the others? And we'll do it again and again. And by doing that, you can say, well, how well can they tell one odor from another? You could say, how strong an odor can they detect, and at what point is it too weak that they can't smell it anymore? And you can have the same person doing the same experiment as a rat or as a monkey that's been trained to do the same task. And one of my colleagues in Sweden, Mattias Laska, has really done a wonderful job doing comparative experiments where he actually has mice and monkeys and humans in the same experiment at the same time comparing the same odors. And what he's found is that for some odors, the humans are the most sensitive, and for other odors, say, the mice are most sensitive. And it really seems to depend on what the question is and what odor is actually being detected.
Does it often involve things that food and safety and the things that are important for them to be able to recognize something?
That's a really good question, and it's a little bit risky for me to answer because it's difficult to make generalizations about smells. It's not like, in sound you can talk about the frequency of a sound and say, oh, it's a high-frequency sound or a low-frequency sound. In odors, you're talking about chemical structure, which is very diverse, and so it's hard to make broad generalizations. There are definitely cases where it seems like it would make ecological sense. So there's, for instance, an odor that's distinct in human blood, that humans turn out to be much more sensitive, 1,000 times more sensitive than mice at detecting that particular odor. But then there are other odors that are totally ordinary and mundane sorts of odors that tend to be more floral, I guess, that humans tend to be better than other animals or among the best compared to other rodents or other mammals. But it is difficult to make generalizations.
John McGann is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, associate professor at Rutgers University, the head of the McGann Laboratory on the Neurobiology of Sensory Cognition. His recent research paper is called Poor Human Olfaction is a 19th Century Myth. Here's a call from Evelyn in Gold Beach. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is fascinating. I have a question about, don't know if this is even possible to test animals for taste, but I'm finding my sense of smell and my also it seems about the same time my sense of taste have really changed over the years. I'm going to be 70 this year, mm-hmm. and I mean, I can eat jalapeno peppers now, and I never could before.
So you're less sensitive?
I'm wondering if, it would seem to me it's logical there's a connection there, at least in humans, and, who knows if
you
how
are
do you taste an animal
for right, taste. Evelyn.
Absolutely right, and you say.
You're absolutely right. So most of what we colloquially refer to as taste is really smell. It's that when you put food in your mouth and you chew it, the odor from the food goes up the back of your throat and into your nose in what's called retronasal smell. And the majority of what we perceive as the flavor of food is really smell. If it's not sweetness or saltiness or sourness or bitterness when you describe the food, it's mostly smell. And as you age, at least as a population, there's a real tendency to lose your sense of smell. That basically about half the population over age 65 experiences some loss of smell, and that manifests as a loss of flavor from food. And actually, you hit a really classic example, which is that hot peppers don't use the typical smell or taste system. They actually use a different system called the trigeminal system, which is kind of like if you got a sniff of ammonia, that sort of burning feeling mm-hmm. in your nose. That's also the trigeminal system. And as often as the population ages, people begin to sort of shift their diet because they don't get the same enjoyment out of their food. They shift their diet more towards the things that are left, which includes sweet, sour, salty, and bitter tastes, but it also includes things like hot peppers. The trigeminal system still works even when the sense of smell stops.
John, we've been talking largely about structure. I want to come back to Paul Broca and talk about culture a bit, because his work seems to indicate that humans just didn't think smell was that important to them, or because they could reason they didn't need it as much. And I just wonder how much of the long-lasting hold of the idea that humans didn't have a very good sense of smell was sort of a cultural thing, in the sense that, you know, it was beneath us to go around sniffing like dogs or something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Broca, to some extent, was subject to confirmation bias of his own, that he was living in a culture where there was some sense that smell was sort of dirty or animalistic, and to be sort of a rational human being was really the goal, and if smell was sort of animalistic, then we should get away from it. And he really had a big influence down the line. So everyone knows the name Sigmund Freud, the famous psychologist. He actually started his training as a physician, and in fact, his first book was not about psychology at all. It was about aphasia, the language problems after stroke, and he was intimately familiar with the work of Broca. He'd trained in the same research area, and so he was clearly aware of Broca's beliefs, and Freud took it even a step further, and he said, gosh, you know, part of becoming a human was becoming, evolutionarily speaking, seemed to be to become possible to have mental illness, right? And so while Broca was trying to say, why do humans have free will, Freud was to some extent saying, well, why do humans develop mental illness and other mammals mostly don't seem to? And so he also kind of settled on this idea that by losing our sense of smell, we were kind of being separated from our animalistic roots, and that could open us up to vulnerabilities. And he actually thought that humans who were really in touch with their sense of smell, who really derived pleasure from their sense of smell, were at a greater risk of actually developing mental illnesses. He thought you were neurotic if you tended to really enjoy your sense of smell. And so it kind of propagated down through the ages through psychology as well as through biology. And then Broca was also a founder of anthropology. And so it's really been gotten wrapped up in our culture to think that humans had such a bad sense of smell compared to other animals. And it's true. Again, we're different. And so, you know, if you go put your nose on the ground in a park, you will find really interesting smells that you didn't know were there. And humans can track scent trails, but it's still not the same as a dog. And so it is easy to look at a dog and say, wow, they can, you know, find all sorts of cool stuff and track animals through the woods. And we don't tend to write the same, you know, sit there with amazement and say, yes, but look at all the foods you can discriminate, or look at all the wines and scotches you can enjoy, and that kind of thing.
You were talking about scent trails, which reminds me of some other research I was reading about yesterday. Berkeley, I guess 10 years ago, had people blindfolded in a field tracking. I think it was chocolate syrup. Have you done any work like that through your lab?
You know, I know the folks that do that work are Noam Sobel's group. They're in Israel now, actually. They really had a great time with that experiment, and it was neat to find that you could blindfold undergrads and tell them to stick their nose on the ground and go, and they really could follow odors. We've talked about doing it, but it takes a lot of space. You can't do it in the rain, and it's still a little bit uncontrolled in that, you know, you don't know quite how close the person puts their nose to the ground. And so we tend, maybe erroneously, we tend to try to focus our work on things we can do in the laboratory where we have a little bit more precise control over what exactly is happening to the subject. But it is something that I worry about in the back of my mind, that maybe we'd be better off if some of our experiments really were kind of done in the wild, as it were.
So are there ways we can train our sense of smell to be a little more acute, John McGann?
You know, it's a good question, and it's a difficult one to answer. Certainly there are professional perfumers and winemakers who spend, you know, much of their lives learning how to do this. And if you test, you know, sort of odor professionals against non-odor professionals, they're a little bit better at really basic discrimination tasks. They're a little bit better at telling you, you know, which seven odors are in this mixture of chemicals that I gave you. But they're not way better than the average person. Where they really stand out is that they have words for smells in ways that most of us don't, right? Maybe it's a linguistic thing, but we just don't actually have that many words for odors. And when we do, they're usually based on the source. Where did the odor come from? It's floral or it's woody. And so I think those folks that receive training, they get a little bit physically better and they get a lot more sort of precise in how they think about and conceptualize things. There is some evidence now that if you've lost your sense of smell from an accident or from an upper respiratory infection, that there are some forms of training that might actually be helpful in restoring your sense of smell. So while it's difficult to know how much better you could get it, if you've lost it, there is some evidence that training might help you get it back.
If your sense of smell goes away, though, not by accident, and we're just down to a few seconds here, John,
sure.
I mean, is that a sign of trouble that you need to get some medical attention?
Unfortunately, there aren't an awful lot of therapies. If you go to your doctor, again, in part because there's this longstanding belief that human smell wasn't very good and so it didn't matter, your physician may not know what to tell you. But there are avenues for olfactory training that can be helpful. And there's actually, I'll tell you a website. There's a nonprofit in England called The Fifth Sense. It has a fantastic website as with resources for people who have lost their sense of smell.
It's the fifth sense dot something?
Good question. I think it's the fifthsense.org.uk. Let me quickly pull it up. Yep, fifthsense.org.uk.
.org.uk. Okay, we've learned a lot today. John McGann is Associate Professor at Rutgers University, head of the McGann Laboratory on the Neurobiology of Sensory Cognition. And we learned a lot about the nose today. His recent work is called Poor Human Olfaction is a 19th Century Myth. John McGann, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.